know that the proportion of AIDS cases among women has continuously increased from the beginning of the epidemic until today, and these numbers go even higher at this point by 2006. However, women were really invisible in this epidemic almost for the first decade of HIV. All right. And essentially were viewed as vectors of disease. So women were really being focused as mothers who were infecting their children or as prostitutes who were infecting men around the globe. And that was really the focus of women during the first few years of the epidemic. For some reason, no one was asking how they were becoming infected. In the United States, it was in the mid-90s when heterosexual contact became the leading source of infection in women. And because of how we classify people, it is likely that it was much earlier than that. And at CDC, if you are an injection drug user and you are you get infected with HIV, you are assumed to have become infected through your injection drug use, so you're automatically listed under that category, even if you say you never shared equipment and that you had unprotected sex with a known HIV-positive partner. It's just the way the classification works. So it's very likely as you look at these lines that it probably was much sooner that women were predominantly infected through sex, and that is certainly true today. And so in some ways, for some women, unknowing victims, for others, perhaps knowingly putting themselves at risk, and I think some of the challenges we think about prevention is how to help women really not become victims. I'm going to focus on a study which is a longitudinal study that is looking at the extent to which the intersection of sociocultural prescribed sexual gender norms and socioeconomic context are associated with sexual risk, specifically among African American and Latina women. My colleagues, Olga Grinstead, and our consultants, Hortensia Armado and Gail Wyatt, really helped contribute to the development of this study. Today, I'm only going to be focusing, though, on the cross-sectional aspects of the data. And why are women so vulnerable? Well, there are a series of reasons why women are vulnerable, but today, I'm really going to be focusing on information that relates to control over sexual relationships, economics, and to a lesser extent, some structural patterns. But obviously, there are multiple levels of areas that make women vulnerable. Economics and gender is something that we've talked about what we talk about in the assumption rather than looking at what we actually know. So we typically think that it's poor women that are more vulnerable for all the reasons that we think and we know poverty contributes to poor health outcomes. But how does the dynamic really work in terms of how does it make women more vulnerable? And that's a bit of what I'm hoping to discuss with you today. So again, we already discussed what we were doing. This is actually the street name. It was called Women's Vision. You know that you have your research titles and then you have your street name. And it was called Women's Vision and this was our recruitment card. And to be eligible in the study, you had to identify as either African American or Latina or all the variations of those two ethnic and racial identifications. You had to be 18 years or older, living in the Bay Area where this was conducted, and had to have had a male sexual partner in the previous 12 months. We did some formative work in really trying to make sure that we were going to do the right thing in this study. And in looking at gender roles and how women thought about it, it was very interesting because for Latina women, they talked about gender roles in relation to men. But African American women really talked about gender roles in relation to society's expectation of them as women. And that was an interesting difference right there culturally in how women are treated in the United States. And yet we were really actually thinking specifically about sexual gender roles, which in a more broader sense differentiates itself by men being preoccupied with sexual performance, such as the Viagra craze, and women perhaps being a bit more romantic and love-oriented as they think about sex and gender. Among African-American women, it was interesting as they discussed the public versus private view of African-American women, with black women being viewed as strong in the street but weak under the sheets, was one of the quotes from one of our participants. And the scarcity of African-American men may lead women to hide their independence or intelligence, or again, as a woman said, we have to dumb down for our men. And the importance of the slave history and how it made women survivors. Among Latina women, it was different. For Latina women, many talked about having to put their sexuality out there, that it becomes part of how they succeed is to be putting their sexuality out there. Some women talked about not needing men for money anymore, but wanting respect from them, and wanting new values from men, and I think, again, really speaking to the gender expectation. But at the same time, they themselves talked about decision-making is often based solely on gender, meaning because he's a man. We also explored economics and social capital in the study and tried to understand how women viewed this. There were more similarities based on class than those based on race and ethnicity, and I think this is something for us to be looking at closely. Women with high social capital, which in this case we would consider things like access to people and influencing people, that they were still perceived to be potentially put them at risk for HIV if you had higher social capital because you're basically out there more. The example was women are more likely to go to a bar if they have money and have friends that will go to the bar. Could that put them at higher risk than very poor women? And so it may work also differently at different levels of socioeconomic status. And as I said, may be a vehicle for risk itself. Our methods were we did street recruitment, venue-based recruitment, and a quasi-respondent-driven sampling recruitment. And, you know, our recruiters were amazing. Sort of in the morning they were dressed in jeans and T-shirts on the streets where we might find, you know, lower socioeconomic status women. And in the afternoon they put their business suits and would go to business socials where they were trying to find the higher-income women. So that we had to do a lot of different interesting and creative recruitment strategies. Our hope was to recruit 600 women with 4 data points, bringing them in every 6 months. And we use Audio Cassie survey. We also had them do resource maps of the social resources in their neighborhood. So they had a map where they would put if there was a market nearby, banks, you know, other things. And we also had a qualitative component where we would ask women about their relationships so that we'd have the hardcore survey questions, if you would, but then we'd also have the richness of people actually talking to us about their relationships. We also then collected epidemiological and neighborhood measures to put women in their context. This is a map of our participant locations. As you can see, for those of you who are familiar with the Bay Area, it goes pretty far out, not just San Francisco proper, but really farther out. So this is San Francisco proper, but we have women who really went from as far up as, you know, a couple of hours away. Just demographically, by design, of course, we had half Latina, half African-American. You can see the mean age here. Levels of education didn't really differ, and incomes, although a little different, did not significantly differ. Relationship status, we had sort of a third single, a third that were in a relationship and not living together, and then the other third you could almost collapse. They were either married or in a relationship and living together, so a good range of the type of relationships. Perceived social class is how women themselves identified where they fell in the class ratio. And as you can see, we had a predominantly, at least self-identified, working class, but our intent was to get the whole range. We had a harder time getting women who actually self-identified as being upper class. And so, but you see here that this is essentially the range. I'm going to use this perceived social class to really divide the women into 4 groups, because it matches very closely to their family income and level of education, and because I think it's important how women perceive themselves when we're comparing across these characteristics. So, for example, you know, you don't see this very often in HIV research, but I wanted to show you how women get their income because it's actually very interesting. You know, the majority are working, but I think of interest is to look down below. So sex trade was not different across class groups in terms of the percent of women who are engaging in the sex trade. And interesting, again, although not significant, we see that the upper class Latinas were more likely to be selling or running drugs compared to the other groups. So just trying to change a little bit of your stereotypes in your mind, if you will, about class and race and ethnicity. And then we talk about financial power. So do women have financial power? Well, these are women's assets, and again, what you're going to find is an incredible correlation between the two upper classes, both African-American and Latina, much more similar than different. And things like owning real estate, this is besides your own home, you can see that we have 10 and 12%. So we have a lot of women with some good resources, even at all levels, some that have some benefits like 401ks and owning some stock you would find even at the lower level. So again, just to give you a sense of the women themselves. Stressors in the previous 6 months. Well, all women on some level, except for the higher Latinas, feel that they have insufficient money for necessities. A third of them have lost a partner in the past 6 months. And interestingly, among African American women, they're much more likely to have experienced the death of a close person in their lives. And again, no difference, however, in the proportion that have been physically attacked or raped across class. Thinking about control over sex, coercion, and violence, we also wanted to look at childhood sexual experiences. And these were experiences that happened prior to the age of 18. And as you can see, once again, there were no differences, really, to speak of. None of them were statistically significant, but you can sort of see the variation and the large number of proportion of abuse that women experience. And I think this is simply the reality in women's lives, which is unfortunate. Oh, my goodness. Okay, quickly. And these are also sexual initiations without choice. So the first time you had vaginal sex, was it by choice? And this gives you the proportion who said no. So again, you see some wide variation. The average age of that non-choice vaginal was 14 across ethnic and class races. Anal sex was in their 20s. And giving oral or receiving oral was in their 17 or 18 year olds age group. Finally, the women's desire, in case we think that women aren't sexual and like sex themselves, I like wild, uninhibited sexual encounters. Again, no difference among the class and race groups, and I won't go through all of these, but just noting that, you know, women do have desires of their own, and like watching X-rated videos, you know, again, stereotypes about women not being themselves sexual beings. The one difference here is that Latinas seem to like exploring their sexuality more and wanting new excitement and sexual experiences compared to African American women, but no class differences. And finally, to get into the actual behaviors, large proportion of women, except for the upper class Latinas, had any risky partner. Again, knowing that they might have a risky partner. So you see a lot of risk across groups. Again, of interest is the large proportion of women who report concurrent relationships. And this is an area that we're really learning more, that women are having, not at the same time, simultaneously meaning, but at the same time you have one or two partners you're having sex with, and you know the increased risk that leaves us. And again, no difference by class or race. And the perceived vulnerability, these are the type of risky main partners with main partners that you see here. A lot of women knowing that their partners have other female partners across race and ethnicity. The difference was here that, again, the Latinas are upper class compared to others. And non-main partners were enormously risky, and they knew it. The women knew it. So again, women are engaging knowing that their partners that they're having sex with are risky. However, condom use is still low. Less than 50% of all women across class are using condoms at last sex, with Latinas being the least likely. And these are women who always use, and you can see these numbers are really, really low. So in the face of knowing they're having risky partners, we see that they're not using protection. We asked about all their experiences as an adult to tell us about a sexual regret and an ideal partner. Again, for time, I'm not going to go through these, but they were very interesting to talk about what women were regretting in terms of the lifetime sexual regret. Some had to do with the age at which they started having sex, having too many partners, or having sex when they really didn't want to with partners. And I think it speaks to women struggling with how do they take control over their sexual lives. So in summary, there are a lot of things that there are no differences about. So as we talk about vulnerability to HIV, we have to be careful in our assumptions about class and race and understand that women of all classes are at risk. But there are some differences that could explain if we start to see some of the economic difference of incidence, although we don't get that data to know, are the women getting infected more poor than not? And again, black women more likely to experience economic stress and death people close to them, larger number of lifetime male partners, lower class women having higher proportion of main partners who have sex with other women, Latino women more likely to want to explore sexuality, have new exciting experiences, higher class women less likely to identify a high-risk partner, and less likely to use condoms. Obviously, a lot of implications as we think about sexuality in women. We think about regrets that women have and how they're dealing with those, how women are dealing with their desires. Can they take control? How do we develop interventions that make sexuality a positive experience, therefore they can have more control over that experience by feeling that you are a sexual being, your sexuality matters, your sexual pleasure matters, and really making sure then that you have the kind of sex you want to have. And I will thank all of those who helped me with this. Thank you.